Imagine for a second that you were sitting in a perfectly quiet room. You're trying to read, or maybe you're just, winding down for the night, but you hear this constant rushing whoosh, or maybe it's this rhythmic mechanical clicking. And the strangest part is it is completely synchronized with your own
Oh, which
pulse.
is terrifying for people.
Exactly. So you finally go to the doctor, right? And you're bracing yourself for the usual speech that it's just stress or maybe some mild hearing damage, and that you're just going to have to learn to live with this invisible phantom
Yeah,
noise.
the classic tinnitus diagnosis.
Right. But instead, the doctor leans in, places a stethoscope against your skull right behind your ear, and says, "I can hear it too."
Which is just wild to think
It
about.
really is. So, welcome to the bizarre reality of objective tinnitus. Today, we're unpacking a masterclass of clinical research by Professor Ali A. Dinesh from Florida Atlantic University to figure out how your body can basically turn into a literal broadcasting
I
station.
love that description.
Thanks. Our mission for this deep dive is to explore this super rare category of tinnitus where the noise isn't, a glitch in your auditory software, but an actual physical acoustic event happening inside your head. And we're going to look at why that phantom sound might actually be a siren warning you of a real medical emergency.
It fundamentally changes how we understand hearing distress,
Yeah.
honestly. Because when you mention the word tinnitus to someone, they almost always picture a high-pitched ringing caused by standing too close to the speakers at a concert.
Right, or just getting older.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just a natural aging process.
Right.
But that is subjective tinnitus. The sound exists entirely within the neurological processing of the patient. Nobody else can hear
It's
it.
all in their head, literally.
Right. But the clinical data Professor Dinesh focuses on deals with objective tinnitus. It is measurable. I mean, you can literally put a microphone up to it.
Wow.
Yeah, it has a physical, mechanical, or vascular origin. So it completely pulls the phenomenon out of the realm of psychology and drops it squarely into the realm of physics.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because to truly understand how someone else can literally listen in on the noise inside your head, we first have to, separate this physical phenomenon from that standard everyday ringing.
Definitely.
Looking at the American Tinnitus Association's data from a few years ago, objective tinnitus makes up only about 1% of all tinnitus cases.
It's at a tiny slice.
1%. I mean, it's incredibly rare, which I imagine makes it incredibly isolating for the person experiencing it.
Oh, isolation is a huge factor,
Yeah.
which is why getting the mechanical diagnosis is so incredibly validating for these patients. They aren't going crazy.
Right.
And within that tiny 1%, the clinical framework breaks it down into a few distinct subcategories.
Yeah.
You have spontaneous tinnitus, which actually arises from microscopic movements of the outer hair cells deep inside your cochlea
Wait, the cells move on their own?
that literally vibrate on their own,
Yeah. Yeah.
producing what we call otoacoustic emissions. Then you have mechanical tinnitus arising from the physical movement of structures in the middle ear. And finally, you have pulsatile tinnitus, which represents roughly 5 to 10% of the cases within our 1% slice today. That is the classic whooshing sound, perfectly timed to the person's heartbeat.
I like to think of it this way. Standard subjective tinnitus is like a ghost haunting your house that only you can see.
That's a good analogy.
It's highly distressing, it ruins your peace of mind, but there is no physical footprint. Objective tinnitus, on the other hand, is an actual intruder hiding in your basement.
Right, knocking things over.
Exactly. It knocks over the trash cans, it leaves muddy footprints on the floor, it creates physical, measurable evidence that a doctor can detect and track down.
What's fascinating here is how the body's internal signaling can blur the lines between what you perceive and what is physically happening.
How so?
We'll take a category called somatosensory tinnitus, which effectively bridges this gap. This occurs when changes in physical touch, pressure, or joint movement, like forcefully clenching your jaw or turning your neck to a specific angle, actually alter the pitch or volume of the sound you are hearing.
Oh, wow. So moving your body changes the ringing.
Exactly. It proves that your auditory system doesn't exist in a vacuum. It's heavily crosswired with the physical structures and nerves surrounding your ear.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, if a patient has severe tension in their temporomandibular joint, their TMJ, simply treating that jaw issue can sometimes completely alleviate the ringing.
That is wild. So, if there is an actual physical sound being produced, something physical absolutely must be generating the acoustic energy, right?
Correct.
And since pulsatile tinnitus matches the heartbeat beat for beat, that immediately points the finger at the body's internal plumbing. We have to look at the vascular system.
The heartbeat is the ultimate giveaway. If it pulses with the heart, it is vascular until proven otherwise.
Okay.
And when clinical audiologists map out these vascular origins, they divide them into two distinct camps: arterial and venous.
So arteries and veins.
Right. The arteries, of course, are the high-pressure pipes blasting oxygenated blood from the heart up to the brain. The veins are the lower-pressure pipes slowly draining that deoxygenated blood back down.
Got it. Now, looking at the arterial side of things, a lot of the culprits are exactly what you'd expect as we age. Things like atherosclerotic carotid artery disease.
Yes.
Basically, plaque building up inside the carotid artery, which is incredibly common in patients over the age of 50.
Mm-hmm.
You also have arteriovenous malformations, or AVMs, which are these dangerous abnormal tangles directly connecting arteries and veins without the usual capillary buffer.
Which can be very serious.
Right. And then there are carotid artery dissections, where the inner lining of the artery actually tears.
Those arterial issues are serious, like you said. But venous anomalies are actually the most common culprits overall in otology clinics.
Really? The lower pressure veins.
Yeah, exactly. And these often involve slight anatomical quirks with incredibly sci-fi sounding names.
Oh, I saw this in the paper.
Yeah. So a patient might have high-riding jugular bulb, meaning the top of their jugular vein sits unusually high up in the skull base. Or they might have a sigmoid sinus diverticulum, which is just a tiny pouch protruding from the vein wall.
A pouch on the vein?
Right. Or venous sinus stenosis, where the main drainage vein simply narrows.
Wait. So the sound you hear is literally just your own blood taking a sharp turn or squeezing through a narrowed pipe near your ear.
Pretty much.
Because if I'm watering my garden and I kink the hose, you know, the water immediately starts hissing and spraying violently. Is that what's happening inside the veins in my skull?
The garden hose gets us halfway there, but it misses the acoustic reality of the human head.
Okay, what am I missing?
Imagine that kinked hose is buried inside a highly resonant bony cavern, and it's physically wired directly to a microphone.
Oh, geez.
That is your anatomy. When blood flows smoothly, what we call laminar flow, it moves like a lazy river. It's essentially silent. But when that blood hits a narrowing, a sharp turn, or a pouch like a diverticulum, the flow becomes turbulent. It turns into whitewater rapids.
And that creates sound.
Exactly. That turbulence generates physical vibration, acoustic energy. And because the major veins of the head run millimeters away from the temporal bone, the extremely dense bone encasing your inner ear, that bone acts as a perfect acoustic conductor.
So it just transfers the sound right over
it? Yep. Channels the vibration of the turbulent blood directly into your cochlea. Your ear is functioning flawlessly. It is just picking up the incredibly loud, faulty plumbing right next door.
That paints such a vivid and, frankly, loud picture. I mean, we're listening to the literal fluid dynamics of our own bodies amplified by our skull.
It's amazing when you think about it.
It really is. And I can see why distinguishing between arterial and venous plumbing is so crucial. If it's an arterial issue with plaque or a tear, you're looking at a major stroke risk that needs immediate intervention.
Exactly. But the diagnostic mystery deepens when the local anatomy is perfectly fine.
What do you mean?
Well, what happens when a patient gets a scan and the local pipes directly around the ear show absolutely no kinks, no pouches, no narrowing whatsoever, yet that whooshing sound is still pounding away in their ear?
Right. If the hose isn't kinked, you have to look at the water pressure itself.
Yeah.
You have to zoom out to the entire body's systemic pressure. And this is where a condition called idiopathic intracranial hypertension, or IIH, enters the picture as a massive systemic culprit.
IIH is a perfect example of why tinnitus is a multidisciplinary issue.
Yeah.
Intracranial hypertension simply means high pressure inside the skull.
Right.
The risk profile for this is strikingly specific. It predominantly affects young, obese women, typically between the ages of 20 and 50, and it creates a terrifying cascade of symptoms.
And the really wild part is that pulsatile tinnitus is often the very first symptom a patient notices.
Almost always.
Long before anything else goes wrong, they just hear a whoosh. Then come the severe headaches, then come the vision changes, things like transient visual obscurations, where their vision randomly blacks out for a few seconds.
Which is incredibly scary.
I can't even imagine. And eventually, papilledema, which is a physical bulging of the optic disc in the back of the eye.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it comes down to the simple physics of a closed box.
Yeah.
Your skull cannot expand.
Right, it's a solid bone.
Exactly. It is filled with brain tissue, blood, and cerebrospinal fluid, or CSF.
Mm.
In IIH, the pressure of that CSF rises dramatically. The fluid has nowhere to go, so it starts crushing the flexible structures inside the skull.
Oh, wow.
First, it pushes against the optic nerve. That's the papilledema and the vision loss you mentioned. Yeah. But crucially, that high-pressure fluid also physically compresses the venous sinuses, the veins draining the brain.
Oh, I see. So the veins themselves are structurally normal, but the intense pressure of the brain fluid is literally stepping on the hose from the outside.
Precisely. The external pressure squeezes the vein flat, which creates a severe narrowing.
And back to the garden hose.
Yes. The blood is forced through that narrow gap, turning from a silent laminar river into roaring, turbulent rapids. The turbulence creates the sound, the bone conducts it, and the patient hears the whoosh.
That is an incredible chain reaction. A problem with brain fluid causes a sound in the ear. But wait, it doesn't just stop at brain pressure.
No, it doesn't.
There are other systemic causes that create a hyperdynamic circulation, meaning the heart is just working in overdrive. Things like severe anemia or hyperthyroidism where your metabolism is racing.
And pregnancy.
Wait, really? Someone can literally hear their own pregnancy in their ear?
It happens more often than you might think.
That's wild.
Think about the physiological demands of pregnancy, or severe anemia for that matter. In anemia, your blood is starved of oxygen-carrying red blood cells, so the heart has to pump twice as much blood, twice as fast, just to deliver the same amount of oxygen to the brain.
Makes sense.
In pregnancy, you are supporting an entirely new vascular system for the fetus. Cardiac output goes through the roof.
Right, your body is working overtime.
Exactly. You are forcing a massively increased volume of fluid through the exact same size pipes in your neck and head. That sheer volume and speed creates turbulence all on its own, without any kinks or pressure needed.
Wow.
The remarkable thing is that once the systemic issue resolves, you treat the anemia with iron supplements, or the pregnancy concludes, the blood volume drops back to normal, the turbulence stops, and the sound completely vanishes.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting, though. We've talked extensively about the rhythmic whoosh of blood, you know, the fluid dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
But what if the sound the patient is experiencing is a distinct click? Or what if it happens completely independently of their heartbeat? If it's not the plumbing, we have to look at the architecture of the house itself, the walls, the framework, the solids.
Moving from vascular to structural causes completely changes the diagnostic hunt.
Yeah.
Let's start with the muscular components.
Okay.
Professor Dinesh's clinical overview heavily features middle ear myoclonus. Inside your middle ear, attached to the tiny bones of hearing, are two microscopic muscles, the tensor tympani and the stapedius.
Tiny little muscles.
Right. The stapedius is actually the smallest skeletal muscle in the human body. Their normal job is an acoustic reflex. They instantly lock down and stiffen the ear bones to protect your delicate inner ear from loud, sudden noises. But occasionally, they glitch. They start to spasm.
I imagine it's just like that intensely annoying, involuntary eye twitch you get when you're deeply sleep-deprived or highly stressed.
Exactly.
But instead of your eyelid twitching, it's happening on a microscopic muscle strapped directly to your eardrum.
That's exactly the mechanism. It's a myoclonus, a repetitive rhythmic muscle contraction. Because these muscles are physically tethered to the eardrum and the ossicles, every single time they twitch, they yank on the hearing apparatus.
Ouch.
Well, it doesn't necessarily hurt, but it creates a very loud, non-pulsatile clicking or tapping sound. It sounds like a moth fluttering inside your ear canal.
That sounds awful.
It is. There is also palatal myoclonus, where the muscles of the soft palate, the roof of your mouth, go into spasms. Because the palate is connected to the ear via the Eustachian tube, those spasms reverberate right up into the ear as a clicking noise.
And beyond twitching muscles, you have actual structural defects in the bone itself. There's a condition called superior semicircular canal dehiscence. Now, dehiscence just means a gap or a missing patch.
All right. But to understand why a tiny missing patch of bone is so devastating, you have to understand the acoustic seal of the inner ear.
Okay, lay it on me.
Normally, your inner ear is encased in the hardest bone in the human body, the temporal bone. Sound comes in through the eardrum, travels through the fluid of the cochlea, and dissipates safely. It's a closed, perfectly calibrated loop.
Makes sense.
Dehiscence means the bone over the top balance canal, right at the base of the brain, has thinned out or vanished entirely.
So it punches a third hole into that closed loop.
Exactly. It creates what audiologists call a third window. Suddenly, the acoustic insulation has a massive leak. Sound from the rest of your body, which is usually blocked out by that dense bone, now has a back door directly into your hearing and balance center.
Oh.
It completely alters the fluid dynamics of the ear. Patients with this don't just hear a whoosh, they suffer from something called autophony.
What's that?
Their own bodily sounds become unnaturally painfully loud. They hear their own voice booming inside their skull. They can hear their heartbeat, their own heel strikes when they walk, and incredibly, they can even hear the sound of their own eyeballs scraping against their sockets when they look around.
That sounds absolutely maddening, to be trapped in a body where every tiny movement is amplified like that.
It can be severely debilitating.
And if that wasn't terrifying enough, there is also the possibility of tumors, specifically paragangliomas, like a glomus tympanicum. These are typically benign tumors, but they are highly vascular.
Highly vascular almost understates it. These tumors are essentially chaotic, tightly packed bundles of abnormal blood vessels.
It's just a ball of veins.
Pretty much. Because they are so rich in blood supply, they literally pulse with every heartbeat. They often grow right inside the middle ear space.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, if an ENT doctor shines a light into the patient's ear with an otoscope, they won't just see a normal eardrum. They might actually see a red or blue pulsating mass pressing right up against the translucent eardrum.
That is so creepy.
It is a tumor broadcasting its own turbulent blood flow directly into the hearing apparatus.
So if you are a clinician sitting across from a terrified patient and you have this massive list of suspects ranging from kinked veins and high brain pressure to twitching ear muscles, missing bones, and pulsating tumors, how do you actually solve the mystery?
It requires an incredibly systematic, evidence-based approach to rule out the dangerous causes first.
Right.
The encouraging statistic here is that over 70% of pulsatile tinnitus cases have an identifiable and very often treatable underlying cause. You don't have to just throw up your hands.
That's a relief.
It starts with the clinical history. Is the sound pulse synchronous? If yes, it's a vascular. Does it click like a moth? Muscular? Does the patient have sudden severe headaches and visual blackouts? Systemic pressure.
And then there is the physical exam, which involves a diagnostic trick that absolutely blew my mind. The jugular compression test.
It's so simple, but so effective.
A doctor can literally place their fingers on the patient's neck, gently press down to compress the jugular vein. And if the sound is coming from a venous issue, the whooshing simply stops. It just mutes it. The idea that a doctor can press a physical mute button on your neck to figure out what's wrong with you is brilliant.
It's an elegant piece of diagnostic logic. By gently pressing on the neck, you temporarily stop the venous blood flow returning from the brain on that specific side.
Right.
The blood simply reroutes down the other side of the neck. If the noise instantly stops, you have unequivocally proven that the sound is being generated by turbulent venous flow on that side.
Hmm.
Clinicians will also use auscultation. They take a stethoscope, place it around the ear, on the skull, and down the neck, listening for brutes.
Brutes.
A brute is the medical term for the audible sound of turbulent blood flow. If the doctor hears it, the objective diagnosis is confirmed.
So what does this all mean for the patient? Once the physical exam gives them a clue, how do they actually look inside the skull to find the exact kink or missing bone?
You cannot just guess when you are dealing with the vascular architecture of the brain. Imaging is the absolute gold standard, and clinicians use a highly targeted, multimodal approach because different machines see different things.
What kind of machines?
They will use an MRI and MRA magnetic resonance angiography to look at the soft tissue of the brain in the arterial blood flow, searching for tumors or AVMs.
Right.
But an MRI is terrible at seeing bone. So to find a tiny missing patch of bone like a dehiscence, they must use a high-resolution CT scan of the temporal bone.
That makes sense.
To look at the veins, they use MR venography. And if they suspect a complex vascular shunt, they use the ultimate test, digital subtraction angiography, or DSA, where they inject contrast dye directly into the blood vessels to watch the flow in real time.
And because the causes are so varied, the treatments are equally diverse. If the imaging reveals a narrowed vein, they might use endovascular therapies.
Exactly.
They literally go in through the blood vessels and place a tiny mesh stent to hold the vein open, restoring smooth laminar flow.
Which is incredible.
Yeah. If it's a muscular twitch in the ear, they can inject botulinum toxin Botox or prescribe muscle relaxants to paralyze the spasm.
Right.
If it's that high-pressure IIH, treatment might involve weight reduction or medications like acetazolamide, which actually tells the brain to produce less spinal fluid, thereby lowering the pressure and unkinking the veins.
This raises an important question about how the medical community and patients themselves should approach tinnitus.
What's that?
Historically, if someone complained of ringing or whooshing in their ears, they were often dismissed. It was treated as a nuisance. But the clinical framework makes it clear there are red flags.
Okay, like what?
If you present with sudden onset pulsatile tinnitus, If the doctor can hear an objective brute with a stethoscope, or if you have accompanying neurological symptoms like vision changes, that demands urgent, advanced imaging.
It's not something to ignore.
Not at all. It proves that objective pulsatile tinnitus is a critical medical warning system. It is your body sounding a physical alarm about your cardiovascular or structural health.
But we also have to address the elephant in the room. Even with all the state-of-the-art imaging, the MRIs, the high-res CT scans, the angiography, the data shows that up to 30 to 50% of these cases still remain idiopathic.
Yeah, that's the frustrating part.
Meaning after every single test is run, they still cannot find the mechanical cause.
And that is the hardest reality for a patient to face. When you fall into that remaining percentage, the management strategy has to pivot.
What do you do?
If you cannot find the structural leak to fix, you have to treat the patient's perception and distress. This involves advanced sound therapy to introduce pleasant background noise that masks the internal whoosh, allowing the brain to relax.
Kind of like a white noise machine.
Exactly. It also heavily relies on cognitive behavioral therapy. Clinical models use the SEC model, focusing on sensation, emotion, and cognition.
How does that work in practice?
Well, when you hear a loud, unexplained noise in your head, your brain interprets it as a threat. That spikes your anxiety, which makes your brain hyper-focus on the sound, making it seem even louder.
Vicious cycle.
Right. CBT breaks that feedback loop of distress. It treats the accompanying anxiety so the sound fades into the background, much like how you eventually stop noticing the hum of your refrigerator.
It's a powerful reminder that while typical subjective tinnitus might just be a phantom signal, you know, a glitch in the brain's auditory processing software objective and pulsatile tinnitus are literal physical sounds demanding to be heard.
Beautifully said.
They are the rushing fluids, the twitching fibers, and the dense bones of our own biology, broadcasting on a frequency only we can initially hear, offering vital clues to our deepest internal health.
And that is the most important takeaway for you, the listener. If you or someone you care about ever experiences a sound in the ear that is perfectly in sync with the pulse or a rhythmic mechanical clicking, you need to understand that it is not just a psychological issue.
Right.
It is a very real physical symptom. And unlike many other forms of hearing loss or distress, it has a remarkably high rate of successful medical intervention. You do not have to just learn to live with it. You need to get it investigated, rule out the red flags, and find the source.
Which leaves us with a lingering kind of mind-bending thought to end on today. If up to 30 to 50% of these cases still remain totally idiopathic, even after exhaustive, state-of-the-art modern imaging, what undiscovered microscopic structures or subtle fluid dynamics inside the human head are still hiding from our most advanced MRI machines?
That's a great question.
Are our bodies fundamentally much noisier, much more mechanical than we ever realize? And our brains are just usually masterful at running a constant noise-canceling software. Until one day, that acoustic insulation springs a leak, the noise-canceling system breaks down, and suddenly a doctor leans in with a stethoscope and realizes they can hear the machine inside you too.